I would like to read this morning from the book of Deuteronomy and chapter 33, the 33rd chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. Now we should notice verse 1. This is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. So that helps us to see that these are the last words that came from the lips and the ministry of Moses, the man of God. Last words. Now let's notice what he says about Levi. It is of that I want to speak for a little this morning. Of Levi, verse 8, of Levi he said, let thy Thummim and thy Urim be with thy Holy One, whom thou didst prove at Massah, and with whom thou didst strive at the waters of Meribah, who said unto his father and to his mother, I have not seen him. Neither did he acknowledge his brethren, nor knew his own children. For they have observed thy word, and kept thy covenant. They shall teach Jacob thy judgments, and Israel thy law. Notice the two names of the man there. They shall teach Jacob thy judgment, and Israel thy law. They shall put incense before thee, and whole burnt sacrifice upon thine altar. Notice the two altars of the tabernacle here. That is, by implication, the golden altar of incense, they shall put incense before thee. Then there is the burnt altar of sacrifice, the brazen altar, I should say, of sacrifice. Whole burnt sacrifice upon thine altar. Bless, Lord, his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Smite through the loins of them that rise against him, and of them that hate him, that they rise not again. Now we know that God will bless the public reading of his precious word. Last words are always of great importance to us. In Genesis chapter 49, to which I would like to refer in a moment, we have the last words of Jacob, that great man of God. You remember that at the end of that chapter we read, when he had gathered his feet into the bed, he yielded up the ghost, and was gathered unto his fathers. So as we read through that long chapter, but most wonderful chapter, Genesis 49, we have the last words of Jacob. Here we have in Deuteronomy 33 the last words of Moses, the man of God. If we turn to 2 Samuel chapter 23, we have the closing words, these be the last words of David, the sweet psalmist of Israel. And of course, if we turn to those beautiful sections that we did briefly turn to in the conference, from John chapter 13 to 17, we have the closing ministry that came from the lips of our blessed Lord himself, spoken within hours of the cross. And then if we turn to 2 Timothy, we would find the closing ministry of that great servant that we have thought about in the Bible reading, the Apostle Paul. So we turn today to the last words of this great servant of God, Moses. Now we could go profitably through the chapter, but that's not what I want to do today. But I've selected for us to look for a few moments at what Moses tells us concerning Levi, this one son. Now I know that if I said to you today, what was the priestly tribe? You would say to me, that was the tribe of Levi. And of course you would be right. This is that tribe that God raised up and befitted them to go into the sanctuary. But I do have to remind you, and I know you'll know it, that really, God intended all his people to be priests. He intended the whole nation to be a priesthood unto him. But because of failure in the nation, they were restricted from the privilege of priesthood, and one tribe alone was chosen of God. Notice with me first the expressions that are used of Levi, the priestly tribe. And I'm going to come, of course, as you'll appreciate, to the fact that you and I have been constituted priests, and we belong to that holy priesthood of which we read in 1 Peter chapter 2, and also that royal priesthood that we read of in the same chapter. So there's much for you and I to consider as we look at these things briefly at the beginning of the meeting today. Notice now, when we come to what Moses says about Levi, he calls him in verse 8, "Thy Holy One." So we notice then that sanctification must mark the priest, "Thy Holy One." And Levi is spoken about as being one who is specially holy in the eye and in the purpose of God, "Thy Holy One." Then notice again that in verse 9 we see that God had made him and given him a special call. And he said to his father and to his mother, "I have not seen him." He was separated from the rest of the nation, and separated even from family relationships in a sense. And you'll notice that at the end of verse 9, a most interesting thing is said about this tribe. "They have observed thy word and kept thy covenants." Now, when you come to verse 10, we find that they are to teach Jacob the judgments of God, and they are to teach Israel the law of God. So they have a teaching responsibility. Then when we come to the end of that verse, we notice that they have responsibilities in the sanctuary. That is, they must be a worshipping people. Priesthood is linked to the principle of approach and worship. So we see that it says here, "They shall put incense before thee." And these Levites were to function at the golden altar. They were to place that frankincense that had been on the fire, touched with the fire from the brazen altar. There is a direct, can I just emphasize that now? There's a direct relationship in the tabernacle between the golden altar and the brazen altar. It was the coal of fire that burnt the sacrifice that ignited the frankincense. That incense was only made sweet to God when it had been exposed to the flame. Now notice that a priestly man must function at both of these altars. He must put before God that which ascends as a sweet savour to him. I will look at the application briefly in a few moments. But also he must put, as we can see in verse 10, burnt sacrifice upon the altar. There must be that which will meet the sacrificial throne of God upon the altar. But there must be that which will rise to him to bring pleasure and joy to his heart. Now we'll try to apply it in a moment, but let me just right now remind you, you and I are a priestly people. I hope, brethren and sisters, we've been at the golden altar this week. It reminds us of prayer. It reminds us of approach. It reminds us of worship. And don't you believe now that all worship takes place at the breaking of bread? In fact, you don't read too much of that word in connection with the breaking of bread. Worship should characterize the heart that has been redeemed. And every saint in the meeting today should have been at the brazen altar in their spiritual experience. But Matthew, we need to have been at the golden altar, I meant. But we should have been at the brazen altar. For the brazen altar is the place of sacrifice. And it brings me to the work of Christ. If my heart, are you listening now? If my heart is not taken up with the sacrificial work of Christ, it will leave me a cold and barren Christian. I remember a dear old brother. He was an evangelist in South Wales. He came to Liverpool when I was a young man, and one night I was in the home after a meeting, and a group of young men were there. And he told us this. His name was Mr. Willie Banfield, from Swansea. He said this. He said, "I've always in my life, every day if I can, to spend at least 5 or 10 minutes at Calvary." And you keep yourself, it'll keep you right. You've been to Calvary today. Oh, I know we needed to go there to get our sins forgiven. We need to be there to keep us right with God. And so the priest must be at the brazen altar, and he must be at the golden altar. Now come again, and notice that, not only is there that, but it says in verse 11, bless his substance, Lord. Accept the work of his hands, and protect him. Smite through the loins of them that rise against him. So I won't ask you a question now, but I've got to try and answer it. If you have never read, now listen, this is my question. If you have never ever read one verse in the Bible before, and if you did not know anything about the characters in the Bible, and I had read these verses to you, you know, from verse, what was it, from verse 8 through to the end of verse 12, and say then I said to you, this man Levi, now listen carefully to my question, I said to you, this man Levi is one of 12 sons of one man. Remember, you never heard of him, and you never heard of the father. And I said to you, what do you think of him? I think you would have said, he must have been the best of all the sons. He's called God's Holy One. He teaches his brethren. He stands at the altar. He seems to be the highest. He seems to be the best. He seems to be the greatest of the 12 sons. What I'm going to ask you now, is that true? Hope you're thinking about it now. Let's turn back to Genesis 49. And let's look and see what the father of these sons said about these 12 men. We're coming back to these last words I mentioned of Jacob. Now it's interesting to notice, if you look, if you're with me now in Genesis 49 at verse 2, you've got the two names of the man here. Jacob, the old man, he's going to die, but he gathers them in and he says, gather yourselves together and hear ye sons of Jacob. He sees a lot of Jacob in his son. See the old deceitful nature in him. But look what he says, hearken unto Israel your father. He's going to give them a God-given spiritual ministry before he goes home to the glory. That's the first thing to notice. Now when we come to verse number 5, we're going to get this man Levi, because that's the only one we've time to single out. And we've hardly the time to do that. We're going to do as much as we can with him. Look what it says now in verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments, the word is weapon, of cruelty, are in their homes. You look into the home, says Jacob, of these two sons, and there are weapons of cruelty. Now listen, I've got to just briefly intimate what that means. But you probably know. It's going back to Genesis chapter 32, and rather 33. It's going back to Genesis 33. Where these two sons took their weapons and they slew the men of Shechem in cold blood. They told lies, they deceived them, they answered deceitfully, and they were murderers. Are you listening to that now? Levi was a murderer. Now look again what it says. It says in verse 6, O my soul, come not thou into their secret. They shared a secret. And it was a dark and dastardly secret. They have told lies in the fields of Shechem to kill those men. We haven't the time to look into the circumstances. It's very interesting to look at. Look what else it says. In their anger, they slew a man. In their self-will, they dig down a wall. The margin says they hocked the very oxen. So they were marked by anger, and they were marked by self-will. Doesn't look very much that they were the best of the sons of Jacob now, does it? Now come again. Look what it says in verse number 6 again. Verse 7. Cursed be their anger. We read in Deuteronomy 33 of this man, bless Lord his substance. The man who's under the blessing of God in Deuteronomy, he's under the curse of God in Genesis 49. Look, it says, cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, they were marked by anger and wrath. And God says, I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. That's all I want to read from Genesis 49. I want to try and bring those two things together for a moment. Can you see, brothers and sisters, what I'm just trying to draw your attention to now is this. Levi was not the best of his brethren. If we had started the chapter 49 with Reuben, we would have said, Reuben, thou art my firstborn, the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity. We would have found that Jacob is saying many good things about his son, but he can't find one good thing to say about Levi. Where has the change come in? That's the question we've got to ask. Why has it become all different? In Deuteronomy chapter 33, why is he called God's Holy One? Why is he at the altar? Well, listen, that's something I ask myself often about me. Don't you? I sometimes say in my heart, why is it that God in grace has given me the ability to go into his presence and to enjoy the things of God and to ruminate upon Calvary and to bring joy to his heart in bringing a little fragrance to the heart of God? What is it? I was just a guilty sinner. And my feet were swift to shed blood. Romans 2 tells me that. And the way of peace I did not know, and neither did you. What made the difference? Oh, you say to me, that's easy, I got saved. Well, then Levi must have got saved somewhere. His story is in Exodus 32. You don't have to turn to it now, I'll try and describe it briefly. Moses has been on the mountain. You remember, up in the presence of God. He received the law from the hand of God. He comes down with the law, and down in the wilderness there's an idolatrous throng, and they surround the golden calf. And the voice of Aaron, the very high priest. Listen, Aaron belonged to the tribe of Levi. You listening? One of the greatest leading Levites. He said, these be thy gods, O Israel, that brought thee out of the land of Egypt. And they were ascribing to a thing they'd made themselves. A calf of gold. What God had done in redemptive power in bringing them out of Egypt. And you remember what happened? The stones were broken. The stone, that was a symbolic act, wasn't it? Must have been. Because on the stone it was written, thou shalt have no other gods before me. They'd broken it down there before Moses broke the stone. They'd broken his law before he even broke the stone. But when the God's servants came down into the desert, into that idolatrous throne. You remember what happened then. The cry went out. But God was going to destroy the whole lot. And it was on that day that about 3,000 souls died, you remember. And the cry went out, who is on the Lord's side? And who stepped out? Levi stood over on the Lord's side. He got saved in our language. He got saved. And he became the priestly tribe. Now, brethren, there's something nice about that. To see a man moving at the altar of God, at the golden altar. To see him moving at the brazen altar. But once his feet were stripped to shed blood. No wonderful thing to be saved. Now listen what God has done for you and I. He's made us a priestly people. And this is what God did to the tribe of Levi. But that's not the end of my little message. It's only the beginning. Because I want to talk to you about four ways, four aspects of ministry that God put into the hand of the Levite. And as we examine these, we'd like to have more time to do it, but there isn't. But as we examine them, will you keep in mind that you are a priest, and that I'm a priest. And these things apply to you and I today. So let's first of all turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10, and we'll look at the first aspect of ministry that God put into the hand of a Levite. Once he'd made them the priestly tribe, when they took their stand on the Lord's side, they were made a priestly, the priestly tribe. Now in Deuteronomy 10, we're going to find the first aspect of priestly ministry that God gave to them. Look at verse 8. Deuteronomy 10, verse 8. At that time, the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord. Now when you read Lord in four capitals in the Old Testament, it's the name, it is the divine title Jehovah. Jehovah. So we're reading to stand before Jehovah, to minister unto him. They have a ministry to Jehovah himself, and to bless his name. That's why, verse 9 tells us, that's why Levi had no part or inheritance with his brethren. The Lord is his inheritance. And this first aspect of ministry that God gave to the Levites was to minister to Jehovah himself. You know, brothers and sisters, don't you sometimes wonder, how is it that God takes pleasure, the God of the universe, the God who put the sun into its place and the moon and all the stars and so on, how is it that he takes pleasure in a little gathering? Think of tomorrow morning now. When the saints gather, you're ascending. And those simple emblems upon the table. And brother after brother will write, who is he speaking to? He's ministering to Jehovah himself. We had a great man in the UK when I was a boy. He came from South Wales. His name was Mr. Reg Bryant. And one Saturday night, our brother had been speaking in the gospel hall I came from, in Liverpool. And we were fixing the seats round, you know, to put them round the table. I want you to listen to what he said to me. I'll never forget it. He put his hand on my shoulder. He was a very warm-hearted man, you know. He loved the Lord and he loved his people. This is what he said. Jimmy said in his Welsh accent, tomorrow we're going to be here with the Lord. And he said, the Father will turn to the Son and he'll say, can you hear what they're telling me about you? That's what we do on Sunday morning. We tell the Father, we minister to the Father all about the Son. How lovely thing. And the Levite was given this man whose feet were swift to shed blood. This man whose hands were stained with blood. The very worst of all the five. God had changed him now. And he can do what the Reubenite, the first tribe, the Syrian tribe couldn't do. He can go into the very sanctuary. Worship is a wonderful thing. Now it's not just, I've said it already, it's not just respected to the breaking of bread. Don't misunderstand. Well, when we come to the breaking of bread, let's be sure, brothers and sisters, we've got something to bring in. You know, the poet said concerning salvation. Now listen to this carefully now. The poet said, and we sing it in the hymn concerning salvation, nothing in my hand I bring, simply to the cross I bring. We had nothing to bring to God when we came as guilty sinners. But don't you sing that now about the breaking of bread. It's not really true. We should come with full hands. We've got Christ to bring to the Father. We've got the fullness and the glory. And the more you read of Christ in the week, now don't you think, dear sister, because you can't take part in the meeting, that you don't bring Christ to the Father? Of course you do. But mind you, your heart gets filled too when you hear brethren telling God all about his Son. And there's something sweet. Now I know we thank him that we're saved. I know that. And there's nothing wrong with that. We would be wrong if we didn't do that. But we've more to tell him just than we're saying. We've got something now, the glories of Christ, to bring to the Father. You see, there was a big difference between that golden altar. He's a big subject. And that brazen altar. The golden altar speaks of the worth, the fragrance, the smell of Christ. If I can use that word in Sebastian, the fragrance of Christ. And the brazen altar speaks of the work of Christ. Now aren't those two lovely things to tell God about at the breaking of bread? And not only at the breaking of bread, thank him every day for his Son. Thank him every day for dying for you on Calvary. And thank him every day for all that he means to you now and all that he means to God. You know this, God looked into this world for 3.5 years and he saw 33.5 years. And he saw something he'd never seen before. You listening now? Never seen it before. He'd never seen a man that was holy. He'd never seen a man that never made a mistake before. This is God in heaven. And his eye was in the middle of Palestine on a man that walked in the loneliness of Nazareth and by the Sea of Galilee. And his heart was gratified. It was satisfied. And these lovely things for us to bring to the Father in our worship. So we have, in Deuteronomy 10, they have a ministry to Jehovah. Now I want to be fair to our brother, so I want you to come to my second point. And I want you to turn to Numbers now, chapter 18. Numbers chapter 18. Now when we turn to Numbers 18, we're going to notice in verse 1, Jehovah is speaking. And Jehovah said, and he's speaking to Aaron. Jehovah said unto Aaron, so we stop now and we ask the question, who is Aaron? Aaron was not a priest, he was the high priest. You say, well, have we got a high priest? You know we have, except he's called our great high priest. So Aaron is speaking, sorry, Moses is speaking to Aaron, or Jehovah is speaking to Aaron. Now look what he says in verse 2. Of thy brethren, that thy brethren of the tribe of Levi, the tribe of thy father, bring with thee, that they may be joined unto thee, and minister unto thee. So the Levite didn't only have a ministry to Jehovah, they had a ministry to Aaron, the high priest. They must minister unto thee. And we'll see how the verse continues. But thou and thy sons shall minister before the tabernacle of witness. So we're learning now, the second aspect of ministry was not just a ministry to Jehovah himself, but the Levites had to serve and help the ministry that God had given into the hands of Aaron, the high priest. He had a most important function in the nation. He was the high priest of the nation. And God gave to every Levite the responsibility of ministering to the high priest. So you say to me, well, how does that fit me? Well, it fits you and I very well. You listening? You and I haven't only got a priestly responsibility to the Father in our worship, but we've got a priestly responsibility to our great high priest, the Son, in our service. This is 1 Peter chapter 2. Our responsibilities to the Father constitute us a holy priesthood. And if you notice the language of 1 Peter 2, the holy priesthood offers up. But when you come to the royal priesthood, it says, sound forth. Now when you come to the gospel meeting, what do the brethren do up here? And they preach. They tell men and women, yes, that they're sinners, but they tell them far more than that. Sad thing if that's all they told them, wouldn't it now? Oh yes, they tell them about the place of judgment. They must do that, but that would be sad if that was... They tell of Christ. They sound out the glories of Christ. And that's what Peter tells us. He said the royal priesthood is to sound forth the praises of him who has called us out of darkness into his marvelous light. So priests, have you got it now? Levite priests have responsibilities to the Father in their worship. They must be a worshipping people. And the saved people must be a worshipping people. God always made his people a praising people. The first thing they did, if I had asked you the question today, what was the first thing they did when they went through the Red Sea? Then sang the children of Israel a song unto the Lord. They were a praising people. And we sing, we have no redemption, Lord, from bondage worse than theirs by far. Sin held us by a stronger cord. By thy mercy, free we are. We're a praising people. But we're a serving people. We're a serving people. And as long as you and I are down here, we've a responsibility to sound out the praises of Christ. We're a serving people. So you see, there's the second ministry. And listen, are you listening now? When we preach the gospel, don't you think priesthood is finished? We're learning now this is a priestly thing, to tell men and women about Christ. Priests sound out the praises of the great high priest. We're telling men about Christ. And we're longing to bring men to Christ. And we know if they get to Christ, they get saved. And they get eternal life. Oh, beloved brothers and sisters, let's remember the value of these two great aspects of priesthood. But there's four I want to talk to you about. So let's come to the third. And we'll turn back two chapters now to Numbers chapter 16 this time. Numbers chapter 16. Now if you look at verse 8, you'll notice that Moses is speaking to the sons of Levi. Hear, I pray you, ye sons of Levi. So now let's read verse 9. This is the verse I want to read. Verse 9. Is it a small thing? Seemeth it but a small thing unto you, that the God of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. In Deuteronomy 10 we read that they had a ministry to Jehovah. In Numbers 18 we found that they had a ministry to Aaron the high priest. But in this verse we find that the Levite had a ministry to the congregation of Israel. Levites were there to help the congregation. How did it work, you say? Let's make it practical. That sounds a bit mystical. Well, let's go back to Deuteronomy 33 and we'll get it. We'll notice in Deuteronomy 33. Do you remember we read it? In verse 10, they shall teach. So the Levite was a teaching priest. Now please don't you think, I know you don't, you'll pardon me saying it like that, that's just my habit talking like that. But we don't think now, do we, that all teaching's on the platform. There's a very important place for teaching on the platform. But I'm going to tell you, I got some of the best help I ever got in my life from men who sat down beside me and helped me and introduced me to the things of God. And I spoke a few weeks at the funeral of a dear sister in Port Glasgow, in Scotland there, and looked with fond affection on the little man that sat at the front, her husband, over 80 now, a little Irish man, came from Ballymena. But I've all through the years, whenever I've met that brother, and it's still the same today, he's more to give me than I ever gave him. He's just got a fresh mind, you know, he's old, but he's got always a fresh mind. And what he's been reading, he remembers. And he says, Jim, you know, I was reading this today, and he'll bring out some lovely thoughts. And that's the way that we help each other. Now, that was what God gave as a responsibility to the priest in Israel. Listen, let's read it. We're back in 33 for a moment. Listen what it said. They shall teach Jacob the judgments of God. Now notice there are different ministry for the Jacob element. See, there's always the Jacob element amongst us. You'll find it sad. We all should be living very high spiritual lives. That's God's will. But sadly it's not true. And there's a lot of Jacob about us. And you know there's some in the assembly who are not just going on as well as they should. But you look at others and you know that there's something about them and they're living near to the Lord. Now we all need help. And they're going to teach Jacob the judgments of God. And they're going to set the laws of God out to the Israel. You see the spiritual, there's a ministry for the spiritual. We mustn't always be hitting the wrong things in our ministry. We've got to do it sometimes. But we also must be encouraging and strengthening and fostering the development that's in the saints. And the Levite had a responsibility. You'll see it well if you think of what we read in Malachi. Got to the end of the Old Testament dispensation. And listen to what God said. God said this about the nation of Israel, about the priest. He said, the priest's lips should keep knowledge. And they should come and inquire the law at his hands. But you know what the problem was? You listening? They were empty priests. They had nothing to give God's people. Can I say a word to the elder brethren now? Listen, if God has given you that work to do in the assembly, he's made you responsible to get to know your Bible and to get to know your God, so that when the saints come to you, they'll get to know God through you and they'll get to know the scriptures through you. And you're not doing your work as a shepherd if you can't feed. It doesn't have to be up here necessarily. But shepherds must know how to feed and provide food for the flock of God. And it's a priestly function. And every Levite had a responsibility to do it. And you can see that here. And we see that they had to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. May God give us grace to see that priestly aspect. This is what God gave to the priest in the Old Testament. And we are priest, he's given it to us today. Now you say there were four, well there were. And it's just nearly time for me to sit down, but I've time maybe just to say the last one, very briefly. I want you to turn back to Numbers chapter 1, the very first chapter of this great book. And this is my last point. Remember, Deuteronomy 10, they had a ministry to Jehovah. Numbers 18, they had a ministry to Aaron, the high priest. Numbers 16, they had a ministry to the congregation. Well, what's the ministry here? Well, it says quite clearly in verse 48 of Numbers 1, the Lord hath spoken to Moses. And he said in verse 50, thou shalt appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of testimony. And look what it says at the end of that verse. They shall minister unto it. They shall minister unto it. They'll minister to the very tabernacle. And if we read on, we'll find out how they did it. When the tabernacle settled forward, the Levites will take it down. When it's to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up. It's very practical. You're listening, it's very practical. Now let me close by talking to you about the tabernacle. That could take a week, couldn't it? 2 weeks. But I'll talk to you in a minute about it. Tabernacle was. Now I know it was a wonderful structure now. And I know it had those three parts. And all those wonderful articles of furniture. But listen, why was it there? That's my question. Why was it there? One reason. So that God could be in the midst of his people. What's the equivalent of the tabernacle today? The assembly. God dwelling in the midst of his people. Most people who've studied the tabernacle have a book on it somewhere. And most people have noticed that the book has somehow got an artist to depict what it looked like. And what they see is this very, very ordinary looking structure. Now I know there was a lot of valuable material in it, but it looked very ordinary. Very, very ordinary. Dare I say it, with all you Irish folks in the meeting, I've said it in Ireland, so I'm going to say it here. You know, with nothing like the beauty of St. Peter's there in Rome, and nothing like the beauty of St. Paul's there in London. But listen, there was something there that none of those other places had. God was there. And when the assembly gathers, it mightn't have the ornate place that the world has got in its religious building. And it doesn't have all the dress and vestments of the old Judaism. But it's a wonderful thing when God is in the midst. God in the midst of his people. That's the assembly. That's value. Now listen, every Levite had a responsibility to the tabernacle. And every priest, and the sisters of priests as well as the brethren. You listening? We've all got priestly responsibilities to the assembly. Now they didn't all do the same thing. You listening now? They didn't all do the same thing. The Gershonites had a, you know that Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kohath, Merari, and they all had different functions. One carried all the sacred vessels through the wilderness. And others took the boards and carried the weight of things. And others took the curtains down. They all had, especially there's 12, isn't it? I hope you're not leaving everything in the assembly to others now. God has given us all something to do. And brethren, that's the place where he's put his name. It's a priestly place. May God help us to act in priesthood in regard to it. Now, I'm sorry to be so rushed with this, but I trust that the Lord will bless his word. And that what we've considered today at the beginning of the meeting might be a help to us to understand that God, once we were just poor, dirty sinners, and we had no claim upon God, and we were just deserving the judgment of God, like poor Levi in Genesis 49. But by grace today we've got the blessing. Bless Lord, it's such a thing. And God has given us a ministry to himself in worship, and to his Son in service, and to the saints in our ministry, and to the assembly in a practical way. We just allow the blessing.